and the complex structures with the different institutions that work together to maintain stability and order. Mm-hmm. And you need these complex structures for order and stability for society to function. And that there was a division of labor, which I believe was his first published work, which is where anomie kind of came into existence. Mm-hmm. And it means that, like, society... Sorry, I'm taking off my scarf. It's really hot in here.
It is really hot. I've been dying,
yeah. But it's where, so complex society divides labor up into specialized sections. And so the special people are trained for specialized jobs that will benefit society. But only certain people can reach those jobs because mm-hmm. of how social order is.
Mm-hmm.
So a kind of example of this is, like, to train to be a doctor, you need to go through, like, 7 years of medical school. And yeah. that's just to get, like, baseline doctor, right?
For sure.
Then you have to, if you want to specialize into, like, a surgeon, you have to do more training on top of that. And then mm-hmm. if you want to specialize further, like, cardiothoracic surgeon or something, you have to specialize mm-hmm. further in that. And so it kind of weasels out the people
mm-hmm.
that will not be suited for that job, because you have to have, like, you have to be in the right kind of social situation to do it, like, economically, yeah,
for sure,
motivation, like, mm-hmm. you as a person, you have to really want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the best people fit for that job go into that job and make society function that way. So it divides up labor.
Yeah.
But
using a little bit more of, like, I'd say this would probably be a feminist and or indigenous lens critique
mm-hmm.
of, like, the best people isn't always a full batch of the best, right? Because, no. yeah. like we've talked about on a previous episode, is that the institutions that exist in your society affect what you believe is possible for your yeah. situation and what you believe you can accomplish. And also, those institutions at the same time can have very real impacts on who mm-hmm. can make it that far, who can have those opportunities. Because sometimes it's, like, one, who can get into the school, who has the money to go to med school, who has the time to commit to med school, because how can you commit time to med school if you're also taking care of your family, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many social mm-hmm. aspects, and so that's one of those things where functionalism gets critiqued for not always taking into yeah. the social, or if not, also just accepting that these social structures that we view as very harmful and have very negative impacts on lots of groups of people,
mm-hmm.
they have been known to view them as necessary for the function of society.
Yeah. And this is where you can see how it's outdated.
Yeah.
In that certain things were not taken into account. Like, mm-hmm. a very clear one that's taken into account a lot more now is obviously, like, the feminist perspective and mm-hmm. gender. It was not considered important at this time to relate it to that, because women were not working.
Yeah.
Like, when this was published. But the division of labor isn't just looking at it economically. It also then creates your social and moral order within society, because those people that have made it to the top through this, like, draining process mm-hmm. are your elite.
Yeah.
They become your top people in society. And the people that didn't have as much training for specialized jobs, where it was kind of the jobs that, quote, anyone could do,
mm-hmm.
are your bottom of society. And that's where you see the ranking in, like, capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the functionist explanation of it. And he argues that because of this, you will get anomie for the people that don't fit into this
mm-hmm.
kind of structure. That choose, like, say they cannot work for whatever reason. Say they have, like, a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Where they'll be, like, they'll then be kind of outcasted from society because they cannot fit into the roles needed to make society successful. So then they're isolated away, and then that leads to delinquency and crime because they need to find a way to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't do it by earning wages, then they're going to find some other form of doing it, right?
For sure.
But then there's the others that, trying to think, like, how to explain this, the others that there may not necessarily be, like, a physical kind of reason to them not integrating into society. They may just not integrate into society, And then they feel anomie, so they're isolated away. And Durkheim creates this theory that you need to have social solidarity and a collective conscience to then reduce the risk of anomie.
Mm-hmm. For sure, through, like, all of these things, the collective effervescence.
Yeah, which is, like, where I was going to say, like, yeah. leads into, like, your kind of education and background on it, in that you have these unifying symbols around
mm-hmm.
that create collective conscience of, like, unifying people. It's mm-hmm. a shared belief, it's a shared, I don't know, hobby, it's a shared moral attitude, whatever.
For sure.
And it comes down, I think, as well to subcultures. You look at how many youth subcultures there are. I did an episode on it. Yeah, I did an episode
at
on it.
At the beginning,
yeah, when it was just me.
Go back to our archives on CJSF.ca.
When it was just me breaking down kind of the subcultures that we saw in the 1960s to present day, and those subcultures all have a unifying aspect to them.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is where youth are particularly targeted in functionalism, because they're most at risk for anomie when they're transitioning from childhood to adulthood, and you're in your weird stage of, what do I do? Like, who am I?
What do I do? What is authority? Do I like authority?
Yeah.
Do I believe?
And you're becoming yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, that's kind of like where my education is with functionism. I feel like we very much didn't look at Durkheim, but no, I mean, where I'm at with Durkheim, we very much looked at functionalism
yeah.
and Durkheim within it, and not so much him and his work. And I feel like that's probably because we didn't touch on religion.
Yeah.
Is he heavily focused on religion?
I don't think I necessarily have, this piece is, but right. I can't necessarily make a claim for all of his work mm-hmm. since I'm not completely familiar with everything he's written, but I don't think it's his main focus.
Right.
Yeah, this piece that we also didn't super focus on the whole religious, a big part of what we were doing in class is trying to extend this. So, like, the paper I wrote, I had to extend it to a non-religious group, so mm-hmm. I chose the Swiftie fan base. But you can extend this to sports team fan bases, like, any group of people that has a collective thing that they
yeah.
share and support and represent. But I was going to toss a song in here really quick, and we'll come
Let's
back to you with some more thoughts. So this is a cover of Milky Chance's Stolen Dance by Joshua Hyslop and Twin Bandit. Yeah, here we go.
I want you by my side, so that I'll never feel alone again. They've always been so kind, but now they've brought you away from here. I hope they didn't get your mind. I want you
before. We don't talk about it. Dancing on, doing the boogie all night long. Stoned in paradise. We don't talk about it. I want you. We can bring it on the floor. We've never danced like this before. We don't talk about it. Dancing on, doing the boogie all night long. Stoned in paradise. We don't talk about it. We don't talk about it. We don't talk about it.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. It's frightening and stressful to be told that your home is in the path of a fast-moving wildfire and that you need to evacuate. Some people may be tempted to stay put and hope that things don't get too bad, or that they'll be able to defend their house.
And I understand, I sympathize with people who are afraid of what they might lose.
But Rob Stump, the fire chief in Lyons, Colorado, says it's incredibly important to follow evacuation orders and get out quickly. As the climate warms, wildfires are growing more intense and are spreading fast, so he says there is often no time to wait and see what happens. And when people fail to evacuate, they risk their lives and the lives of others.
If I got to send two firefighter EMTs off to try and get someone who'd been warned time and again to get out and hadn't, that's two firefighters that I can't put on an engine doing structure protection to keep the neighboring home from burning down or put on the fire lines. It absolutely takes away from what we're trying to do. I know it's a painful decision to make, but the best course of action is if and when somebody with the training and the expertise tells you that you shouldn't be there, you should listen to them and you should evacuate.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Democracy Now!, hosted by award-winning independent journalist Amy Goodman. Tune in to your daily progressive news, aired Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on CJSF.
And we're back. Thanks for listening. This is Sociologic, streaming from CJSF.90.1 FM on Burnaby Mountain. I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Rebecca.
And today we have been doing a theory deep dive, talking about Emil Durkheim. We've been touching on some of his ideas about making a community and functionalism, just on
social solidarity, social collective solidarity, conscience.
All of the good stuff, you know?
All those lovely, juicy key terms.
So Rebecca has a question for us to discuss now.
Yeah. It was this idea that Durkheim presented in that obviously he looked at society as it has its structures and it functions with all of these integrated bits and pieces. And you need like shared norms and values to work towards a shared valued consensus for society to work, right? Mm-hmm. But it said, I found a section that said he was particularly concerned with how modern societies can hold together and be successful in this scenario when it's made up of individuals who act in their own autonomous manner with distinct interests. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's saying, how can society be so collective in its conscience and have a shared value consensus when individuals are innately autonomous and have their own unique, distinct personas, minds, like ideas?
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting. So you're talking about autonomy.
Yeah, because it's kind of like saying shared society is like you are socialized to know what the values are in society that you mm-hmm. should be achieving.
For sure.
Right, which is like stable income, house, nuclear family ideology, right? Mm-hmm. Those are like your main goals of this time particularly, of what you should be aiming for mm-hmm. and what you should be achieving. But if you're autonomous in your own decisions, how does that work?
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you're told you need to be doing. Because it's kind of like that discussion we had on one of the previous sociological episodes of can you really be truly autonomous?
Yeah, for sure. And so that's where I would pull some critique a little bit in that idea that, yeah, some of those are non-negotiables, right? Mm. Like, you kind of need to be able to eat. And so you need to have a way to eat. And I guess non-negotiable is the wrong word. But the needs of you as a human are greatly benefited by those, where, like, if you have an income, you can buy the food, and then you can live, which is nice.
That's always good, because it kind of felt like when I was reading this, it kind of felt like he's critiquing his own work and his own theory, which I thought was quite interesting as well. Because it's true, like, if individuals, I feel like we're taught to be unique, we're taught to not follow the crowd, we're taught to be our own person,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't fit.
I don't know how applicable that was
back then.
Like,
I guess it's critiquing how it's
early 1900s.
I think it's probably critiquing more how it's applicable now,
mm-hmm.
Because it's not how we're taught now. I mean, we are taught to an extent the same core shared valued consensus. We're taught to have an education, to have financial stability, in order to live. Yeah. You're taught to, like, achieve well in school, to contribute to society, to achieve a secure job.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's differing more now in terms of your family ideology, because for sure. that's definitely changed with views and acceptance.
Some of those ideas are being broken down too. That whole idea that education is your way out, your way to climb, is being threatened right now due to the fact that there's the people... Due to what? Sorry?
Influences.
Yeah. Well, people are just able to make a lot of money not going to school as mm-hmm. one. And then also the people who do go to school aren't able to get jobs. Mm-hmm. And so it's not providing that way. Also, you can talk about, like...
Nepo babies.
That. But also immigrants who come from a different country. It's a big problem in Vancouver where immigrant doctors, the classifications that they have don't transfer mm-hmm. in a way that is work. So you find these people going, it's not de-skilling, but it's like scaling down. Mm-hmm. There's a phrase that I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but basically, essentially, is the idea that you're working at a job that is your way
overqualified
for, and you should be working in a job that is actually using your skills. In Vancouver particularly, we need more doctors, right? Like, it would be really clutch if we could have more doctors.
I think as well it's because there's not a global valued consensus. Like, societal structures are different globally. Like, it's the same with law.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be trained as a lawyer in England, mm-hmm. but you can't practice law in Scotland. Because Scotland has a different legal system and different law.
Laws?
And the same just like globally. But like, my parents, they were wanting to emigrate over to Canada when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum's an architect and my dad's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them would have to resit exams and retrain fully to work those jobs in Canada.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm kind of just thinking, like, how different is modern medicine in two westernized countries?
Mm-hmm.
And how different is architecture in two westernized countries? Do you know what I mean? Like, to the point that you need to retrain and reclassify.
Specifically, because the UK and Canada.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at two westernized countries.
Canada is literally, like, still technically under the crown.
Yeah,
like,
under the Commonwealth. So I'm thinking, like, you're looking at two westernized countries. Like, two westernized countries where the classifications do not follow. So your valued consensus then is subject to geographically.
Yeah, for sure. I've always been... Borders have always confused me. They make... I'm in international studies, too, and we talk so much about the nation state and the idea of building a group of people that relies on borders, has their own system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But just to me, the idea of a border has always been really weird, just because I'm like, it's just a line. Like, mm-hmm. we chose it. Why?
You chose there's exactly people where the on line
one
was.
Side, there's people on one the other side.
Mm-hmm. How different
people are. Move back and forth between those. But mm-hmm. I also think that that's coming from a place where my border has not been threatened. Like, it, I feel like a border becomes a lot more real when there's the threat of it moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, yeah, I mean, I understand it now, but that was me as a child. I was very confused about it. I'm like, what are these lines that we made up?
I find it funny because I feel like borders are so distinct in the UK because the UK has so many different overarching terms, which I've had to mm-hmm. explain being over here, because you have the UK, then you have Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and then you have, like, the fact that the main, I guess, island is split into three different countries, even though the UK is technically the term for the country.
Mm-hmm.
There's three countries within that country. Mm-hmm. But I think the borders are so distinct in the UK because Scotland have their own language, their own legal system, their own political system, even though they're still connected to England. And you have the Scottish National Party in mm-hmm. Parliament that represents Scotland in the UK government, but also with Wales have their own language. You go into Wales, they've got the Welsh dialect, and then mm-hmm. they have English. The Prince of Wales learns how to speak Welsh to be able to represent Wales. Same with Northern Ireland, there's the Irish dialect, and they're also their own separated island off of the coast of like Scotland and Wales, and even Ireland split into Republic of Ireland and Northern of Ireland with a very clear border. I feel like the borders in the UK are so clear, not just by the lines, but through like language, culture, political systems, like all of the structures. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like that slightly differs in other places, because I think with like Canada and the States, the dialect isn't as clear-cut difference.
Yeah, for sure. That's so fascinating. I just got such a good little geography lesson. Yeah. But yeah, so kind of
my English
circling
heritage.
Back.
Sorry, I see we're on a tangent.
The French sociologist, Emile Durkheim. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think really what the most impactful thing that I've learned from him, as I was saying earlier, is just the collective effervescence. I think that was a super cool thing for me to learn about, because I think in the way that I approach my life, I really seek that out, that idea of being part of a group. That's why I rejoined the rowing team, is I want to be on a team again, working towards something with a group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. And so I urge people to try and find that collective effervescence in their mm-hmm. life, because it's amazing.
I feel like it's something I want to experience more. Yes. I feel like I've only experienced it once or twice.
For sure.
It's definitely something I want to search for.
But yeah. So thank you for listening tonight. Catch us next Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m.
And stay tuned for Connor, our music coordinator, with his tech chip show Bitcoover coming up from 8 to 10 p.m.
Fascinating person. You'll mm-hmm. enjoy the listen. But to finish us off today, this is Girl from the Sidewalk, Noah Florsch. I have this playlist that I create with my friend. It's called Story Songs, where the song tells a story, and this is a really good example. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Foot on the sidewalk, headphones in to let my mind walk. In my hands, I'm carrying my shoes. And I'm late to Philosophy 203. Won't McTaggart be so proud of me? And I don't have any notes, just a couple pictures that I drew. My hair looks like a bird's nest, and according to my roommate, I'm a little underdressed. With a cutoff t-shirt and a fanny pack I got at the zoo. 'Cause It's a little chilly for September 2nd. It's like 45 degrees in the middle of the Midwest, and I'm really reconsidering removal of my socks and my shoes. 'Cause the wind is biting at my toes, and the chill is nipping at my nose. My shoulder's feeling heavy 'cause my backpack straps are loose. But it all feels so good when every little thing's exactly how it should be. So it really made a difference when I narrowed down my vision to you. And you had on a denim jacket and a crop top white t-shirt to match it. And your yoga pants were popping and your sneakers, you were rocking them too. And your hair was up in space buns and you were killing with the makeup. And I was looking like a dumbass with my cut off and my hands full of shoes. That's about the time you looked up and saw me in the empty space I took up. And I was feeling dumb 'cause you really caught me staring at you. And honestly, I got a little nervous. I didn't want you thinking I was doing it on purpose. My eyes wander when I'm thinking, I don't know why, man, it's just what they do. Girl from the sidewalk, I wrote this one for you. So if you hear it, know it's my song, if you remember like I do. Hey girl from the sidewalk, I wrote this one for you. If you hear it, know it's my song, if you remember like I do. I wish I said something strong like, what's up, baby? Something funny like, call me, maybe. Something old-fashioned like, hello, Mrs. How do you do? Something really stupid like, I got a drive-by bow and arrow wound from Cupid. Or a simple little hi, my jaw just wasn't working for you. And you were about to walk past me, and you weren't really doing anything to attract me, so I didn't speak a word. I didn't even know what to say. At this point, like 30 seconds have passed. That's another 30 seconds tardy for class. But I'm not worried about anything except for figuring out your name. Now our shoulders rush past each other on the sidewalk, and I notice that you're shorter than how I thought, which is good, I guess, 'cause I'm not really super tall at all anyway. So I look back to see if you look back, and you look back, and our eyes made contact, and you smiled, holy shit, what a perfectly symmetrical face. That moment felt like forever. It was only us and we alone were together. So believe me when I say I think the rest of campus melted away. But hey girl from the sidewalk, I wrote this one for you. So if you hear it, know it's my song, if you remember like I do, yeah. Hey girl from the sidewalk, I wrote this one for you. So if you hear it, know it's my song, if you remember like I do.
What is the forest industry most afraid of? Shifting the conversation from saving old growth to protecting what's left of BC's primary forests, areas with minimal human disturbance and far greater ecological value than tree farms. Save What's Left Conservation Society is a volunteer-run group at the forefront of the movement to save the last remnants of unprotected primary forest through seeking reforms to the government agency, BC Timber Sales. Learn more at savewhatsleft.ca. Find us on social media and please support our vital work through our website.